Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 85.
The Far Ranking Kingdom. Nyefagul.
Yeah.
Literally, the Dharma Destroying Kingdom.
Oof. The king, his whole court, everyone in the palace, they wake up one morning, they're all bald, like completely hairless, overnight.
Not just a few people, the entire royal household.
The monarch, officials, guards, everyone. And their first thought.
Their immediate reaction is fascinating. They think it's divine payback.
Payback for what?
For their kingdom's really brutal history of persecuting Buddhist monks. They'd been killing them.
Wow. So this mass baldness, they instantly connect it to their past actions.
Instantly. What's really profound isn't just the baldness itself, but that it's shared. It's inexplicable. It happens overnight.
And that collective shock just shatters their worldview.
Precisely. It bypasses all the usual rationalization, you know. It hits them right in their fear of cosmic justice.
So it forces this immediate moral reckoning that maybe years of violence didn't.
Exactly. It's a kingdom-wide pivot. One minute they're persecutors, the next they're penitents. All because of hair loss.
It is a pretty dramatic turnaround, but yeah. Is it, you know, genuine change or just fear trying to appease the heavens?
That's a great question. The text suggests it starts with fear, definitely. But the actions that follow, they vow to stop killing monks.
A complete policy reversal.
Right. So whether it's deep inner change or just, let's say, pragmatic fear management, it leads to real behavioral shifts.
It makes you think, doesn't it? Imagine waking up to something so weird, so unexplainable.
That it forces you personally to completely reevaluate everything you believe.
Yeah. That's the setup. And right then, in the middle of this hair crisis.
Perfect timing.
The patrol commander and the East City Marshal show up. They say over 20 thieves kill the gate guards, bust out of the city. It causes a huge commotion. Everyone's alerted. The city's military, the officials, the commander-in-chief, the cavalry, they all give chase.
It gets pretty dramatic. The thieves see this huge official force bearing down on them.
And they make the smart call, drop the loot and run. They abandon the cabinet, abandon the horse, and just scatter. So the officials, they don't actually catch any bandits, but they recover the stolen goods, the cabinet and the horse.
Just a cabinet and a horse. Very suspicious loot.
The king's curious, obviously. He tells them to open the cabinet.
And cue the chaos.
The lid flies open and boom, out jumps Zubaji.
Big C himself. Yeah. Startled everyone, I bet.
Totally. Then Sun Wukong helps Tang Sanzang out very calmly.
The master.
And Xia Wujing just brings in the luggage like it's perfectly normal.
Just another Tuesday on the journey.
But then Baji spots the horse. And he immediately yells at the official holding it.
What does he say?
He said, the horse is mine. Give it here.
Huh. Classic Baji.
Yeah.
Bold as brass.
And the poor official is so terrified, he apparently just falls over.
You can picture it. So this moment, It's a complete shift.
Their reveal.
Exactly. They're identified as holy monks from the great Tang Dynasty. On their way to Lion Monastery in Western Heaven, Tianzhu Kingdom.
The sacred quest.
Right. They see these figures. Tang Sanzang explains. The sheer weirdness of their arrival, then Tang Sanzang's calm explanation, it validates them.
And he does have a clever explanation, doesn't he, for being in a cabinet?
Oh, yes. Very diplomatic. He says, basically, look, we knew you guys were killing monks.
So I disguised myself as a layperson.
Borrowed a room at an inn, hid in this cabinet just to be safe.
And then some actual thieves stole the cabinet with me inside.
Which led to us being caught and brought here. Quite the story.
Plausible enough in this world, I guess. So what happens then? The king must be stunned.
He is, and he confesses. He admits his vow killing 10,000 monks.
Because one monk had slandered him. That was the reason.
That was his justification, yes. But now, seeing these monks and seeing himself bald, his officials bald, his consorts bald.
The shared experience again.
It hits home. He and everyone else, they actually beg to become disciples of Tang Sanzang.
Wow. From executioner to wanting to be a follower. That's huge.
It's a total 180. And right then, who pipes up?
Let me guess. Zubaji.
You got it. Always practical. He asks about a welcome gift.
Haha. Probably thinking about his stomach.
Almost certainly. But then Wukong steps in. The shrewd negotiator.
He puts the brakes on the gift talk.
Well, he rejects the king's offer of, you know, national treasures, gold, jewels.
Why? Most people would jump at that.
Because their mission isn't about wealth. Wukong understands that. He asks for something much more valuable to them.
Which is?
Just update their travel papers, the brochure, and escort them safely out of the city. That's it.
Simple, but significant for their journey.
Exactly. And in return, he promises the kingdom lasting stability, prosperity, long life for the ruler.
Trading earthly treasure for spiritual progress and a blessing.
It really highlights their priorities, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Freedom to continue the quest matters more than anything material.
Okay, that's settled. But then the king does something else quite striking.
Yes.
He asks Tang Senzang to rename the country.
Rename the entire kingdom. That's a big gesture.
Huge. But Wukong jumps in again. Ever the strategist.
What does he say this time?
He points out the current name.
The far-ranking kingdom. Nyefagu.
Yeah.
Literally, the Dharma-destroying kingdom.
Oof.
Inauspicious. Especially given their recent history.
Exactly. So Wukong suggests Fog, Reverend Kingdom, Kinfagwo, adding Kin, meaning Reverend.
Locked Reverend Kingdom. Much better vibe.
And he promises this name change will bring peace, good weather.
Wow. That's some serious linguistic and spiritual diplomacy right there.
The power of a single character, expertly applied. Masterclass.
Yep. So they leave this newly renamed, newly penitent kingdom.
Yeah. Pretty good, understandably. Diplomatic win, kingdom transformed.
But the journey isn't over.
Not by a long shot. Soon they see it. A huge, forbidding mountain looms ahead.
And the mood shifts.
Instantly. Tang Senzang feels it immediately. He senses a ominous energy.
A bad vibe.
Sees violent clouds swirling. He feels physically numb. His spirit is uneasy.
It's not just seeing a mountain. It's a deep internal dread.
Right. It feels like the dread is coming from him as much as from the landscape.
But Sun Wukong, he's calmer, offers some philosophy.
What does he do?
He reminds Tang Sanzang about the Heart Sutra, the Siyok, that Master Ruchel taught them way back.
Ah, the core teachings.
And he specifically recites that four-line verse. Maybe you remember it.
Something about Spirit Mountain being in your heart.
Exactly. Buddha is in Spirit Mountain. No need to seek far. Spirit Mountain is in your heart.
Everyone has a Spirit Mountain pagoda. Good to cultivate under the Spirit Mountain pagoda.
So Wukong's basically saying, Master, the real challenge isn't out there.
It's in here.
The fear itself is the obstacle. It makes the journey longer.
Precisely. Wukong's point is that all the scriptures, all the teachings, they ultimately point inward. Cultivate the mind. Sincerity leads to enlightenment. Fear just trips you up.
Right, which raises that big question, you know.
Mm.
How much of what we see as external problems
are really just reflections of our own internal state, our fears made solid.
Yeah. The mountain is definitely real and dangerous. But Tang Sanzang's fear makes it seem even worse, almost insurmountable.
And the description of the place really backs that up. It gets intense.
Oh, it does. Craggy peaks, wolves, tigers, winding paths, standard scary mountain stuff, maybe.
But then it gets weirder. A sudden unnatural wind kicks up.
Not just a storm wind, something off.
Followed by this thick, disorienting fog, blots out the sun, everything goes quiet, spooky.
It's fantastic atmospheric writing. Builds that dread layer by layer.
And you see the contrast again. Tang Sanzang is terrified. Wukong first is like, okay, wind, fog, natural stuff.
But then he realizes.
Yeah, his perception kicks in. He senses this isn't just weather. There's something else here.
Something demonic, perhaps. Something more than just a physical challenge.
Which leads him to scout ahead to figure out what they're really facing.
He spots this strange wind, some fog. Something's off. So naturally, he zooms up into the sky to get a better look. And using those famous fiery golden eyes, he spots a demon just sitting by a cliff. And the description is pretty intense. It says, bright, patterned, vibrant, but also arrogant, powerful, spirited. You get this real sense of menace.
Mm.
It mentions firm teeth, like steel drills.
Wow.
Wow. And sharp claws hidden like jade hooks. The text really amps up the fear factor. Golden round eyes scare beasts, and silver whiskers bristling make ghosts and gods tremble.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just sitting there, right? It's wildly roaring, showing off its power, and using its cleverness to, like, spray out this fog and wind.
And what's really fascinating right from the start is Monkey King's reaction, his strategy. He has this little secret smile because he instantly knows this isn't real weather. It's the demon making it happen. He actually thinks about just, you know, whacking the demon right then. Bam, done.
Yeah.
But he dismisses it, calls it like smashing garlic too easy. He actually worries it would ruin his reputation, basically, make him look less heroic.
Okay. So he wants a bit more drama.
Exactly. He figures a big rescue, you know, after someone gets caught, that plays better for his fame, which raises that classic question about him, doesn't it? Is his heroic spirit, his getting a bit tangled up with his ego, his desire for glory?
That's such a key tension with him. So, okay, knowing that, he needs bait.
Mm-hmm.
And who better than Pigsy? He knows Pigsy loves food, maybe a bit lazy, so he cooks up this plan. It's pretty cunning. He goes back to Tang Monk and just casually says, oh, it's all clear now. No wind, no fog.
Smooth.
And when Tang Monk asks what caused it, Monkey King just lies. Says he misjudged. He invents this story about a nearby village. Good-hearted people, apparently, and they're tied. Steaming white rice and buns for monks. Says the fog was just steam from the cooking pots. A sign of good deeds.
It's brilliant because it hits Pigsy right where he lives. Right in his weaknesses. His gullibility, sure, but mostly that bottomless appetite. You see him just light up. He immediately believes it, pulls Monkey King aside, asking, hey, did you already eat?
Of course he does.
And Monkey King plays it cool. He pretends he wasn't impressed, says the veggies were not attack, a little too salty, which makes Pigsy even more determined. He's like, salty, I don't care. I'll eat it all. I'll just drink more water. That craving just makes him the perfect target for this whole setup. Our desires really can blind us, can't they?
Totally. He's practically walking into it himself. So Pigsy, now obsessed with this non-existent meal, goes to Tang Monk. But he's clever, too, in his own way. He suggests, oh, maybe I should find some nice grass for the horse first.
Yeah.
Wouldn't want to bother the villagers right away. Make himself look diligent. Then he'll go beg for alms for everyone.
Right, making it seem like a secondary thought, almost.
Yep. Tang Monk buys it. Thinks Pigsy's being really considerate. Sends him off. But Monkey King, he can't resist one last little jab. He tells Pigsy, oh, by the way, they only serve the handsome ones, not the ugly ones. Which, of course, prompts Pigsy to use his transformations.
Yeah. And the transformation itself tells you something. He becomes this, a short, thin monk. Okay, fine. But he's tapping a wooden fish and humming, which isn't scripture at all. It's like a children's learning chant. It just perfectly underlines how little real spiritual depth he has at this moment, despite the monk disguise. It's all show.
He's just focused on the food. So off he goes, humming his little chant, completely oblivious. Meanwhile, the actual demon, it's been busy. It set up a trap, a circle formation, right on the main road, just waiting. And poor Pigsy, dreaming of steamed buns, walks, it doesn't take long, he walks right into the middle of it, bam, surrounded by little demons.
And he still thinks he's in the village.
I know. He cheerfully tells them, hey, I'm here to eat the vegetarian meal. The irony is just chef's kiss.
Oh, it's thick enough to cut with a knife. And then reality hits. Hard. The demons just correct him, totally chill about it. You don't seem to know. We specialize in eating monks here. They explain they're enlightened demon immortals from the mountains, and their whole deal is, woohoo, specifically catching monks like you, taking them home, and steaming them to eat.
Oof. Imagine that penny dropping. One minute you're thinking about buns, the next you are the bun.
Exactly. He goes from guest to main course in about 5 seconds. A really harsh lesson about where unchecked desire can lead you.
So naturally, Pigsy panics. And who does he blame?
Monkey King, of course.
Yep. Starts calling him the stable keeper.
Yeah.
That old insult from heaven. Calls him truly lazy and treacherous. And in his terror, the disguise drops. He pulls out his massive rake, reveals his true pig form, and just starts swinging wildly at the little demons.
Which sends them scrambling back to their boss, the main demon. They describe him, you know, long snout, big ears, his mane. So the old demon king comes out for a look. And the text gives us another great description, this time of Pigsy's true form. A mortar-like snout, about 3 feet long. Tusks like silver nails. Whoa!
Intense.
Round eyes, bright as lightning. Ears fanning wind, making whooshing sounds. Plus the mane like iron arrows down his back. And his skin, rough, kind of greenish skin. And of course, the iconic, the nine-toothed rake.
It really paints a picture. But Pigsy, even cornered, has this surprising, well, bravado. He launches into his life story, tells the Demon King who he is, starts with his glory days. Marshal Tian Peng, appointed by the Jade Emperor himself, commander of 20,000 celestial soldiers in the River of Heaven.
Quite the resume.
Then the fall, getting drunk, harassing the Moon Maiden, Changi, knocking over the Dunyu Palace, eating the Queen Mother's special Ganoderma mushrooms. Big no-nos, punishment, 2,000 hammer blows. Ouch. Banished to Earth, reincarnated wrong, becomes a monster. Then he explains how he met Monkey King, became a disciple, how he's now Raidi. carrying the luggage, doing the hard work, says he's repaying a debt to Tang Meng from a past life. He even gives his original family name, Hunter, and his Buddhist name, Zubaji.
And you know, this whole speech, it's not just exposition dump. It feels like a moment of real self-awareness for Pixie, even in the middle of this chaos. It links right back to those core themes of the book, karma, consequence, the path to redemption, his past actions, all that desire and rule breaking led him right here. But what's really key is the demon's reaction. It hears disciple of Tang Monk and its ears perk up. It knows Tang Monk's flesh is supposed to be, well, delicious, makes you immortal apparently. So suddenly, Pigsy isn't just a random pig monster. He's the key to getting the real prize.
So Pigsy just became the appetizer and the demon wants the main course.
Pretty much. That immediately sets up the stakes for this whole part of the journey. The demon grabs its weapon, an iron pestle or cudgel, and charges. But Pixie gets in one last insult. He calls the demon a foe, a dying master, because its weapon, the te, is like a club used for washing clothes, kind of mocking its choice of weapon.
Even terrified, he's still got some sass. Okay, so the fight is on. And this description sounds epic. Pigsy's rake versus the demon's cudgel. The text talks about Tuke using techniques that roll up fierce winds, and Tuke, the cudgel moving cleverly, unleashing sudden rains. It's elemental.
It really is. A clash between this Tu, an unknown fierce monster blocking their path, and Tuke, the sinful martial Kimpeng who's now trying to protect his master. The imagery is fantastic. The cudgel is like a python striking from a deep pool. The rake is like a dragon bursting from a pond.
Wow, you can almost hear it. Their shouts shake the mountains and rivers. Their roars even startle the underworld.
It's a proper full-on battle. But even though Pigsy holds his own for a bit, showing some of that old martial Tianpeng skill, the little demons start to swarm him. Things are looking tough. Monkey King's son Wukong
pulls out a hair, makes a clone of himself to stay with Tang Monk and Sandy. Meanwhile, his real self sneaks off to check on Pigsy.
So it's like this constant managed paranoia. He's covering all the angles, even if it means a little deception within the team.
It really shows his leadership style. Trust, but verify, maybe. He's always thinking a few steps ahead.
And Pigsy, poor Pigsy, he walks right into trouble, doesn't he? The sources say he gets overwhelmed by these monsters, gradually unable to resist. You can almost picture him panicking.
You can. His usual bravado just sort of melts away, but then Monkey King steps in, but not like directly at first.
Right, it's subtle.
Very subtle. He just appears, lets out this massive shout. The text calls it a Li Shungo Jiao, like a huge roar. Pigsy, hold on! Old monkey's here.
And that's all it takes.
Apparently, yeah. Pigsy hears it, gets a second wind, and suddenly starts fighting fiercely again. The demons, they back off.
Monkey King didn't even have to get his hands dirty, really.
Saves energy, boosts his ally, tests the enemy. It's actually brilliant, like psychological warfare, as you said.
Definitely.
And the aftermath is pretty funny, very typical of them. Pigsy stumbles back, totally worn out, complaining to Tang Monk about the trick, about the substitute Wukong used.
And Monkey King just plays dumb, totally. Well, me, I was right here. Only later does he kind of admit, oh yeah, there were maybe a couple of small demons, but they dared not provoke us. Very downplayed.
And right after that, Wukong uses the moment. He appoints Pigsy as the path-opening general for the next stretch.
So it's not just a random job title.
Yeah, it's a challenge. A test of courage after Pigsy's near miss, pushing him to step up.
And Pigsy's response is classic. He comes out with that saying, you highlighted this. When a young master attends a banquet, he's either drunk or full. When a brave warrior faces battle, he either dies or gets injured.
It's such a Pigsy line, isn't it?
It really is. It's funny, but there's something else there too, like this weird mix of cowardice and almost profound wisdom. What do you make of that? Is it just fear or something more?
I think it's more. It's kind of cynical, maybe. A pragmatic acceptance of the danger. He knows the stakes. It's not just a joke. It's how he sees their whole situation, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
A worldview, like you said earlier.
Yeah, a dark humor, maybe.
Okay, so while they're dealing with their issues, let's switch scenes. Behind enemy lines, things are not going well for the old Demon King.
Not at all. He gets back to his cave, defeated after that run-in with Pigsy, and he's just silent. Remember, his whole plan was grab Tang Monk, get that longevity.
Standard demon goal.
Right. But then this small demon comes up, described as crying and laughing, which is quite an image.
Weird. What's his deal?
He drops a bombshell. He tells the king, basically, Tang Monk's flesh. It's not worth eating.
What? Why?
Because of the disciples. particularly because of Sun Wukong. This little demon shatters the king's whole motivation.
And then he really drives it home, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Your notes mention he gives this incredibly detailed account of Monkey King's power, the whole great disturbance in heaven 500 years ago.
Oh, yeah, it's quite the list. He names, the 28 constellations, 9 luminaries, 12 Yuan Chen, 5 ministers and 4 chancellors, east and west star dippers, north and south twin gods, 5 peaks and 4 rivers, all the heavenly generals. Wow, it's not just saying he's strong. It's like reading off a cosmic rap sheet. It really emphasizes the scale of who Wukong tangled with.
Exactly. It's meant to impress, or rather terrify. And the credibility comes from the small demon's own experience.
How does he know all this?
He explains he used to be at Lion Camel Ridge, Shituo. His old boss there also tried to capture Tang Monk.
And presumably failed spectacularly.
Utterly defeated by Wukong. This small demon barely escaped, so he's seen Wukong's power firsthand. This isn't rumor, it's a warning from a survivor.
And the old demon king's reaction, he buys it.
Completely. The sources say he was greatly shocked and turned pale. Monkey King's reputation precedes him, even terrifies powerful demons. Suddenly, this simple snatch and grab looks like suicide.
Okay, so fear kicks in. Brute force seems like a bad idea now. What happens next? Another demon steps up.
Yeah, another small demon sees the king freaking out and proposes something totally different. A strategy. The split petal plum blossom plan.
Split petal plum blossom plan. Sounds delicate. How radical is this compared to how demons usually operate in the story?
It's a huge shift. Usually, it's just overwhelming force, right? This is cunning. It's about misdirection, intelligence over sheer power, a real evolution in their thinking, born out of fear, maybe.
So how does it work?
Okay, so the plan is pick 3 really capable demons who can shapeshift.
Got it.
Transform them into perfect copies of the old Demon King himself. Helmet, armor, club, the whole look.
3 identical Demon Kings.
Okay. Then these 3 imposters set up ambushes in 3 different spots along the pilgrim's path.
Why 3?
1 for each disciple. 1 for Pigsy, 1 for Sun Wukong, 1 for Sandy. The goal is to distract them, tie them up in separate fights.
Ah, divide and conquer. Neutralize the bodyguards.
Precisely. While the disciples are busy fighting these decoys, the real old Demon King plans to just swoop down out of nowhere and grab Tang Monk.
Easy pickings once the protectors are occupied.
Exactly. The source material describes it like taking something from a bag or picking a fly out of a water basin. Super easy, in theory.
And the old king, the one who was pale with fear moments ago, what does he think of this?
He loves it. Calls it absolutely marvelous. He even promises the smart little demon a promotion to front vanguard if the plan actually works.
Wow. Desperation breeds innovation, I guess.
It seems so.
Yeah.
And the 3 chosen demons, they transform immediately and get into position, waiting for the pilgrims. The trap is set. Tang Monk, traveling along.
Yeah.
Seems peaceful enough.
For a moment, anyway. In this world, peace is often just a prelude.
Huh. Too true. And suddenly, bam, a small demon just bursts out loudly.
It creates a real ruckus, a distraction.
And Sun Wukong, he's instantly alert, sees the demon, tells Baji to handle it.
And Baji, well, he doesn't hesitate, does he?
Nope. Straight in with his rake against the demon's iron club, they're immediately locked in combat.
But here's the clever bit. This isn't just a random fight.
You think it's planned?
Oh, definitely. It's the first part of a plan. While Baji is occupied.
I see.
A second monster appears. And this one goes straight for the Tang Monk.
Knowing that'll draw Wukong.
Exactly. They know Wukong is the main protector. So the second demon pulls Wukong into a separate fight. Golden cudgels swinging.
Okay, so Baji's busy, Wukong's busy.
And then comes the third wave, just as you think maybe they can manage.
Don't tell me. Another demon.
Yep, a third one from behind a mountain, specifically heading right for the monk.
Oh, wow. So Shastang has to react now.
He has to. He pulls out his staff, tries to block, tries to protect his master. He's shocked, but reacts.
So now all 3 disciples are engaged, fighting separate demons, drawn away.
Perfectly executed, a 3-pronged tactic. Diversions, specific targeting.
And while they're all occupied.
That's when the real boss, the old monster, makes his move. He's been waiting, watching from the air.
Clever.
Sees Tang Monk undefended on the horse, swoops down, uses these 5 clawed steel hooks.
Oof, sounds nasty.
And just like that, Tang Monk is snatched, pulled right off his horse into the air, gone in a gust of wind.
Wow. And the disciples are still fighting.
Still fighting, yeah. The source even gives us that line, you know. Woobly.
The one about Zen nature meeting tribulation.
Right. River flow, meaning Tang Monk, again meets a bitter disaster star.
It feels almost fated. Like this had to happen.
Part of the journey's trials. Absolutely. So the master is captured. What do you think happens next? Immediate danger.
You'd think so. So, okay, shift scenes. We're in the demon's cave now.
The old monster arrives with Tang Monk.
And the mood is celebratory.
Pretty much. He's calling for the vanguard, the little demon who started it all.
The first distraction demon.
Yeah, promising him a promotion, says it was a brilliant idea.
And then lays out the plan.
Immediately. Let's steam him, he says. Eat his flesh, get immortality. Standard demon plan, right?
Seems like it. Yeah. But is it that simple?
Ah, here's the twist. This is where it gets really interesting. The vanguard objects.
The little demon objects to his boss.
He does. Says, Your Majesty, hold on. We can't eat him yet.
Why not? That takes guts.
It does, but it's incredibly clever. This isn't just fear, it's strategy. Astonishing foresight.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What's his reasoning? Is he worried about the other disciples?
Not really, Baji or Shaoseng. His real fear is Sun Wukong.
Ah, monkey. Makes sense.
He even uses this specific word, Jaya Guadu. It means like poisonous, fierce, vicious. Captures Wukong perfectly when he's really angry.
So what does he think Wukong will do?
Get this. He predicts that if Wukong finds out they've eaten the monk, he won't even bother fighting them directly. He'll just ram his golden cudgel straight into the mountain, pierce a hole right through, and just overturn the entire thing, destroy their whole lair, everything.
Whoa. Blah, blah. Quite specific. And terrifyingly plausible for Wukong.
Exactly. It shows this vanguard understands Wukong's power and his potential for absolute destruction, not just his fighting skill.
That's amazing intelligence for a minor demon.
Totally
changes how you see them.
It really does. They're not just mindless monsters.
So if eating him immediately is too risky, what's the vanguard's brilliant alternative plan?
Deception. Pure deception. He says, take Tang Monk to the back garden.
Okay.
Tie him to a tree. And here's the key part. Don't feed him for 2 or 3 days.
Why? What's the point of starving him?
Two reasons, according to the vanguard. First, he says it's to make Tang Monk clean inside, like fasting for purification.
Huh. Okay. A bit strange, but maybe ritualistic?
Maybe. But the second reason is pure strategy. It's to fool the disciples.
Also.
The idea is Wukong and the others will search and search, but after a few days of finding nothing.
They might think he's gone for good. Maybe fell off a cliff or just lost.
Precisely. They'll eventually give up, assume the worst, and leave the area.
And then the demons can.
Then they can enjoy him freely without worrying about Wukong bringing the mountain down on their heads.
Wow. That is cunning. Playing the long game.
The old monster loves it. Calls it a brilliant idea.
So they do it. Tie him up in the garden.
Yep. Tied to a tree with a rope. It's not just about capture anymore. It's psychological warfare, almost. A strategic waiting game.
Okay, so let's picture Tang Monk now. Tied up, helpless.
Yeah.
Probably not taking it well.
Not at all. The text says he immediately starts crying. Total despair.
Lamenting his fate.
Yeah, calling out for his disciples. Oh, disciples, you're out there fighting and I'm captured here. When will I see you again? This pain is killing me. That sort of thing.
Heartbreaking. Just utter hopelessness.
But then he hears someone else.
Someone else tied up.
Exactly. A voice calls out from another tree nearby. It's a woodcutter.
A woodcutter? What's he doing there?
Captured too. Says he was caught 3 days ago by the same demons, and he's also scheduled to be eaten.
Oh, man. Misery loves company, I guess. What do they talk about?
This conversation is just, wow. It's the real core of this passage, emotionally and philosophically.
How does it start?
Tang Monk is weeping, saying his main regret is that his death won't be clean.
Clean. What does he mean by that?
Well, the woodcutter asks the same thing. He's confused. Says, you're a monk, right? No parents depending on you, no wife. How can your death be unclean? It's a fair question.
So what's Tang Monk's answer? Why isn't it clean?
It's about his mission, his immense responsibility. He explains he was sent by the Tang Emperor.
Right, to get the scriptures from the West.
Exactly. But why? To save souls. Specifically, to transcend countless wandering souls without masters back in Xing'an in the city of wronged death.
So his death means?
Failure. Total failure. Failing his emperor, failing the people, failing all those countless souls waiting for salvation. His entire journey, his whole effort, as he says, would turn to dust.
That makes his death cosmically unclean then.
Yeah.
A mission unfulfilled.
Precisely. It's a huge weight. But then the woodcutter responds.
Does he understand?
He understands the weight of duty, definitely. But he says his death is even more tragic.
How can it be more tragic than failing to save millions of souls?
Because it's personal. Deeply personal. He cries, explaining he's the only one supporting his mother. She's 83. His father died young.
Oh, no.
If he dies, there's no one. No one to bury him, sure. But crucially, no one to care for his elderly mother. She'll be left alone.
That's a different kind of devastation, isn't it? Just as profound, in its own way.
Absolutely. One is about a vast imperial spiritual duty. The other is about the most fundamental filial duty.
And the text captures that shared pain.
Beautifully. That line, tearful eyes, behold tearful eyes, heartbroken people bid farewell to heartbroken people.
Yes. It just perfectly shows their shared humanity and suffering, despite their very different lives and burdens.
Is there a specific message there? Oh, very much so. The text spells it out. It says something like, "Xiuhu, Yuhu." The mountain man still thinks of his parents' kindness, while this poor monk only knows how to recite scriptures.
Implying the woodcutter's piety is just as valid, maybe more tangible.
And then it continues, "Xiao Chuhu, you act out of filial grace, I act out of imperial grace."
Ah, there it is.
You act out of filial grace, I act out of imperial grace.
So the source of the duty is different personal love versus imperial command, but the principle of duty, of sacrifice, of the grief of failure, it's the same.
Exactly the same. It really levels the playing field, doesn't it? It forces you to ask, what makes a life or a death meaningful? Is it the grand scale or the personal commitment?
That's really profound, found in a conversation between two prisoners waiting to be eaten.
Classic Journey to the West. Deep wisdom in unexpected places.
Okay, so while Thai Monk is having this incredibly deep, albeit depressing, conversation, what about Wukong? Where did we leave him?
He just defeated the demon that was specifically sent to distract him.
Right, so he heads back.
Immediately. Rushes back to the path where he left his master and the others.
And finds nothing.
Worse than nothing. He finds the white horse, standing there riderless. And the luggage? But no Tang Monk.
Oh, the confirmation of his worst fear. His master is gone.
You can just feel the panic, the failure hitting him. He doesn't hesitate.
What does he do?
Grabs the horse's reins, hoists the luggage onto his own shoulder, and just starts searching, frantically combing the mountains. The hunt is on.
He knows it's a demonic abduction.
Oh, yeah. And the text ends this segment with another one of those poignant lines.
Let me guess.
Yeah.
Underscores the difficulty.
Perfectly. And a river flow Tang monk who encounters tribulation specifically meets tribulation.
The great sage son Wukong, who subdues demons, also encounters a demon.